Welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we beat a dead horse 1d6 damage at a time. Today we've just got a whole bunch of books. We're just cleaning inventory here. We're doing some house cleaning. We've got supplements coming out of our ears. It's a supplement spectacular today on System Mastery. It's System Mastery. I'm your host, Jeff. Here, as always, all by myself in the studio. Absolutely no one with me. And you're joining me for a one-hour sonic journey where I will definitely not step over myself or falter or just start mumbling about bullshit at some point. It's going to all make perfect sense all the way through. I'm kidding. Here's John.
Yay!
Hi, John.
Woo!
Thank goodness you're here, because I'm not cut out for this.
No. You shouldn't be in front of a microphone. What is this?
It's been 6 years now, and no one's told me I can't.
I mean, I've told you multiple times.
Yeah, no one listens to you.
It's true.
I mean, thousands of people listen to you, but they listen to you for me.
They listen to me for me, for you, for me.
Hold on. Wait, I'm almost... Is that some kind of sex thing? I feel like that might be some kind of sex thing.
Oh, it's all some kind of sex thing.
Hang on. Let me artfully light your cigarette real quick.
Yeah, there we go. Lean in real close with that lighter.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some synthy jazz music playing in the background. Here you go, buddy. Let me light that cigarette, which is definitely a dick.
Ow, my dick.
Don't worry. It's a disembodied dick.
Ow, my disembodied dick.
Okay, so what are we going to be doing here, John? Today we are talking supplements.
That's right. We, over the years, have...
When in the course of human events.
We've gathered quite a few supplements for some of the RPGs that we've read. Some are just, we reviewed something and someone went, oh my god, I found a thing for this, and sends it to us.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we just get them... when we get the RPG as well, because they're just there.
Yeah, like, for example, I think there's a Deliria supplement that someone just sent to us at the same time as Deliria.
Yeah.
We just, every once in a while, also, I think I have, like, 11 Paranoia books.
Oh, yeah.
Because someone was just dumping a collection.
No, I've got a ton of supplements for chill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, wow. That's...
Yeah.
That's a rarity right there. I think I have the entirety of that Blue Planet edition as well.
Oh, well, there you go.
So we have a lot of supplements floating around out there that make up parts of the vast library of System Masteriums.
And we do want to use every part of the buffalo here, so we are going to review these goddamn supplements.
That's why every 73 or so episodes...
That's right, like clockwork.
I actually don't remember when the first one was. I think it was. It's been more than 73 episodes. I'm pretty sure the episode was in the 40s when we did the first supplement.
Oh yeah, way back in the 1940s.
In the 1940s, we pulled our pants right up to our nipples and we got to work reviewing books.
Yeah, way back in the 1940s.
We were all like, "Listen here, you chowder heads.
Ah,
one more thing you have to know about our boys overseas is that they love the works of additional Star Trek supplement novels."
Boy, howdy, do they.
Hungry for them, they are. Don't worry, boys. Betty Grable sends her regards. Oops, that's all she sends.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome. That's some 1940s stuff.
That is some 1940s right there for you.
You got anything you wanted to do from the 40s?
Nope.
No, it's just me? Okay.
Nope, just
fair.
You.
All right. So I tried a couple different things to find a supplement book worthy. I'm going to be honest, John. I have read 3 books. My attempt to take a little break and do a short, easy book for this week, because our plan this time was we're going to try what we, similar to how we do our bonus content for the Star Wars Expounded Universe show, is we each took books, read them, and our plan is to tell each other stories.
Yeah, I mean, sort of the same way we did with Eorus Essence as mm-hmm. well, but compacted down because it's just supplements instead of, you know, an entire nonsense book of chicanery.
Yeah. So we were thinking, okay, that gives us like practically a vacation, 2 weeks to read a book, then not even a main book, so we don't have to fully understand the combat engine or anything. It's just retreads. This is fantastic. But then every book I picked up and tried was like a supplement book with nothing in it.
Yeah, well, and mine was from a game we reviewed so long ago that I was like, well, goddammit, now I need to read the main book again.
Well, let's see. Who should go first?
I don't care either way.
All right. Well, I got a lot of books to get through, so I'll just knock them out real quick.
Yeah, man. Knock them out the park, Luke.
Yeah. So my first thought was I'm kind of enjoying my Star Wars oats these days. So I thought a long time ago, a listener was nice enough to send us, when we concluded doing our first season of Expounded Universe, the West End Games expansion book for Shadows of the Empire.
Yeah.
And I have a ridiculous collection of Shadows of the Empire shit at this point, because I have, like, the game that someone mailed me. I have the soundtrack for the game that someone mailed me. I have all the action figures that were released for the game for the series.
Man, when you say the soundtrack for the game, because all I did was listen to one CD while I was playing it, mm-hmm. my mind immediately started thinking, "Oh yeah, the soundtrack to the game. You know, Space Jam."
Oh yeah, the soundtrack to Mega Man X. Pretty hate machine. No, in this case, there actually is an official symphony written soundtrack to Shadows of the Empire. I may not have pulled this out for you in the past. I've pulled out so many things for you in the past.
And even when I ask you not to, and I get HR involved.
Well, that's one of the nice things about running an LLC that only has two people in it.
You're HR.
I'm HR. And I'm like, I'll allow it. But I'd better
have a talk with him.
I'll allow it, but he better be going somewhere with this. And indeed I am. No, I also have all the action figures that are so, and my brother of all happened to have a Shizor statue, like an actual like little maquette of Shizor that's a foot high that's been lived with realistic hair. That's
realistic.
Yeah, that's been in my he looks hilarious. He looks like he's artfully laughing at a joke told at a cocktail party. So I have just a lot of roots in Shadows of the Empire at this point, even though it's garbage and I fucking hate it.
Yeah, well.
So I thought, let's look at the Shadows of the Empire source book.
I mean, honestly, I'm going to say, I didn't even think that WEG Star Wars was still going on at the time Shadows came out.
I'm still trying to untangle the complex weave that is how WEG worked and how the EU worked at the time. Because there's stuff in here that there's like fiction in this book that is similar to Shadows of the Empire fiction that I'm pretty sure was not written by the same guy.
Now, can you give me a WEG example?
I'm sorry, I did not read that. This isn't a supplement to WEG's world. Yeah, I can actually. There's a whole bunch of these. Most of them are big, so it's a little it's a little tricky, but there. For example, there's one that's. You remember the Vigos? We're talking about.
This. Oh yeah, you know the giant painting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, the Vigos, the mini reproductions of the painting of Vigo the Carpathian.
Yeah, is Vigo. Everything you're doing is bad. I want you to know this.
No, the Vigos were the sub lieutenants operating under.
The little like. Sub bosses.
Yeah, and we thought it was hilarious because a lot of them had names that were really close to their species name, so it just kind of felt like a dumb list. It was like it's Bobby and the Rodian and Grumple the Gruntle.
Oh, Bobby and the Rodian. This is a great show. Canceled way too early.
Yeah. That's not actually true. The Rodian's name is like Dopper or something. It's not
Dopper.
It's not as interesting. But there's a thing in here where okay, well, in the Shadows of the Empire book, there's a scene where all of these Vigo dudes are put around a table while Shizor kind of walks around and talks about how great he is, mm-hmm. which is kind of Shizor's thing. And while he's doing that, Guri walks around behind them like just some sort of game of duck, duck, goose is happening. And he's like, one of you has betrayed... Oh, I should do the Shizor voice, I guess. One of you has betrayed me.
I know this because I'm colder. More calculating.
More reptilian. Better indeed. Rodian guy was probably like, I'm also reptilian, I think. I'm not sure.
I might probably.
Shut up, you.
Can you do cool sex stinks?
Do you have a bed to work out for you? No.
I can do cool stinks.
No, I sleep in a big comfortable bed with my wife.
Ah, fuck off. Guri, get in here and break up with this guy.
But there's a scene where he's like, oh, I know one of you is a traitor, and we're going to go through the room and list all of you and mention how most of you wouldn't be traitors, and then kill off Green the Human.
Yeah.
There's great art of Green the Human in here, by the way. He kind of looks like if Mixia's Spitlick was a normal adult man. if you were curious, there's art of almost everybody from Shadows of the Empire.
Does that mean that dude has a bowler?
He looks like he ought to have a bowler. I don't think he actually has one in the picture.
Aw, boo.
There it goes. Clezo was the Rhodian. Here's the picture of Green. And you can tell me for yourself. He really...
I mean, you're not wrong.
Right? He's got hair sticking out to the sides. He kind of looks like also like a grown-up adult version of the bad guy from the first Wreck-It Ralph movie. He's just got that big head clown man suspenders look.
Oh, yeah, King Candy. That's who you're talking about.
Yes.
Because I couldn't remember. I was like, there was a bad guy in that?
Yeah, there was a bad guy. He cut Vanellope von Schweetz's memory from the game and left her a glitchy
right.
mess.
He was King Candy.
Yeah.
They decided to go with a Mad Hatter voice for some reason.
I'm Krita the Clanthar. But anyway, there's a whole... That's true. They totally did a Mad Hatter voice.
Yes, that's just Mad Hatter. I don't know why.
Yeah.
And it's Alan Tudyk,
doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. So he was just like, oh, I'm just going to be the Mad Hatter for this.
Yeah, don't try and stop me.
Fuck off. I'm Mad Hatter.
Fuck off, Disney. I'm far too important to you. Look, in 2 years, I'm going to be K2SO, and I'm going to blow your fucking minds. Anyway, there's a chapter in here that's just fiction about all the Vigos in an elevator on their way to that meeting. And
man, that is a great little slice of life there.
Yeah, and if you're one, I mean, there's like seven of them, and they're all like, well, obviously he's pulling all of us in the room at the same time. That means someone's about to get killed. That's just how Shizor operates. So most of them are sitting there going like, I'm very secure in my position. I have not recently betrayed the Grand Prince of the Dark Sun. I, of course, am far too unambitious to ever attempt such a thing, thinks Vecker the Quarren. You know, they basically just cycle through their character traits. And Green the Human's, like, looking over his shoulder, trying to see if there's a camera back there. And he's like, I hope he didn't find out about me. I betrayed him, and I'll never say my own name backwards. What would that even be? I guess just Nierg. Oh, no! The fifth dimension for me!
Damn you, Superman!
So basically, this book is more of an expansion to Shadows of the Empire, the book, than West End Games, the role-playing game.
Well, what does it give you for a role-playing game from here? I mean, I have to assume Faleen are in here.
Okay, so if you're looking for the actual crunch that's in the book, there's about maybe six things of new crunch.
All right.
The new crunch is...
Does it give us the Star Viper?
No, there's no new...
Boo.
Weirdly, there are almost no new vehicles in here. I was really kind of hoping the Star Viper would get stats. You know what? Actually, it does. At the very, very end, it has both the Star Viper and the special Virago version of the Star Viper. So I guess you can purchase them. There's a bestiary at the very end, but for ships.
Yeah.
A shippiary. As those are known.
As they are known.
Yeah. But for crunch for players, outside of a little gear section towards the very back, there is... the following species. Faleen.
Yeah.
Check. Yes, that's good. And if you were wondering, John, are
how
all...
How does their nut stink work?
Oh, well, that's just a racial power they have. They have Okay, so first of all, you have to remember that West End Game Star Wars works by building die pools, and everything's like a number of Ds, which is D6s.
Oh, yeah. Well, everything for Faleen is a number of Ds.
Nuts! Nuts! So they can activate a pheromone ability. All of them have this power,
yeah.
Which gives them +1d to persuasion rolls for each hour. That's just in general, but they can also meditate to increase the value of it up to a +3 persuasion die bonus.
Hmm.
But they have to use that within an hour of the meditation for it to take effect. So you can't just spend your time getting stanky and then hope that you might need to do a persuasion thing later.
I mean... I don't know. I pretty much just spend my time getting stanky.
Yeah, but it doesn't give you huge persuasion bonuses, so.
Doesn't it, though?
No. Aww. I mean, yes, a little.
Yeah.
I mean, if you mean by stanky, you mean your hair has a lovely apple scent.
Oh, it's true. It's delicious. I change deodorant now, and it's kind of fruity as well. I'm just like a walking orchard.
I'm all mint these days. I've got tea tree oil. I'm doing mint deodorant.
I'm doing mint chocolate chip.
And I'll tell you what, it's not helping. I still smell like a whale that died yesterday. Okay, so Faleen have two racial abilities. They have good stats across the... Every race in this game has 12 dice to divide up amongst its various stats, so they don't look more powerful than other races. I mean, they're not more colder or calculating or anything like that.
Oh, they don't have a higher intelligence or something?
They do, but it comes at the cost of a lower, like, charisma, basically. So the Faleen have two abilities. One of them is the aforementioned hormone stink increasing.
Yeah.
And the other one is that they're all amphibious and they can breathe underwater.
Huh.
I had no idea.
That never came up.
Yeah, it didn't. I mean, I would have assumed it did. Now, here's the other thing about the Faleen as a race in this book. You know how Shizor is kind of like a bored noble with a secret revenge fantasy who's ultra rich? And,
yeah.
Well, that's all of them.
Good. I'm glad that they really stuck to their guns on anytime you see an alien for the first time, that's what the whole species is.
This one, every once in a while you come across that where it doesn't make any fucking sense when you try and apply it to the entire species.
An entire planet of bored nobles. Who are they ruling over?
Yeah, it's all chiefs. No, it's bad. It's a bad build. The other species that are in here are Eti.
Ah, the Wumdi.
Wumdi the Eti, who I think that we have now said everything there is to say about Wumdi the Eti in the the actual novel. The Eti are a near-human species, so they're humans who are just a little bit weaker, but they're much more fashion-forward and business-savvy.
Good.
So
they got a high fashion sense.
They could not be especially less interesting, but the picture is just a picture of a kind of a wimpy-looking human.
Oh, good.
I have nothing much else I can even really tell you.
I was really hoping an Eti would be, like, weird looking.
Their special ability is just called Affinity for Business, and it's, like, at the time of character creation. And this is a common power that you see in West End Game Star Wars, is during character creation, each die you spend on a set of skills buys you two dice instead. So that it works that way for like Wookiees, which get some strength skills and so on. These guys get it for business skills.
Mm.
Affinity for business is just during character creation, you spend a die on bureaucracy, business, bargaining, or Belinda. No, last one's value. Bureaucracy, business, bargaining, or value, which the Eddies call the three B's and a V. Then you get two dice instead of your one. Okay. And that they're very, very boring. The next one is another near human that was indeed briefly mentioned in Shadows of the Empire, the Epicanthics.
Oh yeah.
Their names are Zan and Zoo Pike, the Pike sisters.
Okay.
And they are only seen on TV in one early scene in Shadows of the Empire where Shizor, because as you'll John, I'm sure you'll recall, Shizor spends the entirety of the book watching TV screens and commenting.
Oh yeah. I mean, he is just a big goon.
Yeah.
He's like, what do you do? Oh, I just hang out in my room and watch TV, and I have Guri go get me stuff. I may as well just call her Mom.
Yeah, or like Amazon. There's a little scene where he watches two women in a bar fight on a little TV screen. He's like, yes, their exotic beauty is only matched by their deadly martial arts ability. I must have them. And Guri's like, great, yeah, they're mercenaries, so I can go get them for you, I guess. And then they're never mentioned again. They're just called Epicanthics, which I'm going to go ahead and guess is probably the most outwardly racist thing in Star Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, just in general, like, sure, there's a whole bunch of obvious racism in Star Wars here and there if you know where to look. But that one, just calling a whole species after the type of eyefold that Asian people have, is...
I know, it's not like you're like, and these are the Latinoids. Like, oh, please don't.
I mean, that would almost be as bad. It'd be like, I'm trying to think of a way I could even come up with a common racial characteristic. It'd be like if you called black people in Star Wars the sickle cell anemians. So, anyway, Epicanthics are... They're basically humans, but, get this, John, they come from a place so far away and exotic that everyone tends to view them as an exotic type of person, and they have difficulty adjusting to modern life in the rest of the galaxy.
Oh, are they from the far east of the galaxy?
As it turns out, they're from what the rest of the galaxy calls the Orient.
What?
I'm kidding, that's not real.
Oh, God. Yeah. I was willing to believe that.
No, they're actually from someplace called the Pecanth Reach. But they are from so far away from the galactic core that they might as well be, you know, even alien or aliens.
Great.
So no one knows what to make of them, and they don't know what to make of anyone else. They get two dice for every one when spent on cultures, language, or value. And then they have a story factor, which I guess is just a weakness in West End games. And that one's called Galactic Naivete.
Hmm.
It says here that they make excellent wife ooze. I'm sorry. It says that their homeworld is so isolated, they are not especially familiar with galactic institutions outside of their sphere of influence. They often become overwhelmed with unfamiliar or fantastic surroundings from other worlds far from their own. Which is weird, given that they have a racial bonus to getting culture, yeah. languages, and value
no,
skills.
No, when you said that, I was yeah. like, wait a minute. But I thought their whole thing was not that.
Yeah, no, it's almost like they didn't give a shit when they were writing this.
Almost.
The only other new species in here, this is kind of a surprise because they are not in the book, is the ubis.
Ubis.
So ubis, you'd very vaguely remember, I'm guessing, John, as...
Oh, yes, the ubi-dubis.
As the ubi-dubis. A gang of mystery-solving teenagers that roamed the world with a talking velociraptor.
Yes. Everybody remembers the old 40s cartoon, the Ubi-Dubis.
Oof, the 40s?
Yeah, I'm bringing it back to the 40s.
Hanna-Barbera started in the late 60s. You're killing me.
I know.
How am I going to make that work?
Figure it out.
Yeah, I'm a little wisecrack as what I is. Also, the velociraptor hadn't been discovered yet, so we're really having a hard time here.
Oh, they were very ahead of their time.
What if there was a little turkey-like dinosaur, I ask ya?
And the answer is, it would solve crimes.
It would definitely solve crimes. Crimes committed by the Nazis. Nazi crimes. That's what we do.
We solve Nazi
crimes. We're the Ubi-Dubis, which at this point still kind of sounds like something you'd say in a swing song. So that's what we do. We sing swing music and solve crimes, and we got a turkey-saurus.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. That's all makes sense.
Everything makes perfect sense.
Got it. Got it in three. Do wop a do.
Jazz.
Zoot suits.
So anyway,
the ubis you would very vaguely remember as the species that someone hosed out of an outfit so they could give Leia her bounty hunter disguise.
Oh, it's the helmet thing.
Yeah, yeah. The you remember that?
Yeah,
yeah. Because she has a thermal detonator. That outfit is the traditional armor of an ubis mercenary. Ubis are so rare and so secretive that no one in the galaxy has ever, or as far as we know, has ever seen them outside of their armor.
Yeah.
And yet we have a suit of their armor, spare, lying around.
Well, yeah.
And also, it's the perfect thing to dress Leia up in because it's so unassuming.
Well, no one's going to be like, oh, man, you don't look like an ubis. And be like, I don't know the fuck you are.
I guess that's true, but ubis are super rare, and plus they've got a crazy... You know, ultimately, I feel like if you had a galaxy of trillions and trillions of people and there was, like, there's this one species where no one even knows what the fuck they look like, I'd be like, there's got to be teams of people trying to find out.
There's going to be space TMZ who's trying to get that.
Hey, can you take your helmet up for just a second for a picture? Huh? 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 Are the rumors that you look like a weird tentacled dog true?
No comment.
Damn it.
I'm just trying to have lunch.
So yeah, there's actually, not only is there ubis in the book, despite the fact that there were no ubis in the in the book upon which this is based, there are two kinds of ubis in here.
Oh, yes. Ubis?
Mm-hmm. Ubis and doobies.
And doobies.
Obviously. No, there's like true ubis, and then the other species of ubis has like...
True ubis and people dressed as ubis.
Okay, so... True ubis are the ones that never left their home planet.
True ubis.
The other species left their home planet, settled somewhere else, but then became kind of feral and because they got stranded.
Wow.
So they spent years and they became like a sand people type culture. And then they're currently being reassimilated into regular ubis culture.
Weird.
So you have true ubis, and then the other species is called, and I'm going to try this, Yurak Putzk. Ubis.
Putzk.
It's P-O-O-T-Z-C-K.
Putzk.
Putzk. Yarakaputzka. Ubis.
Ubis.
True ubis have the following abilities. Survival. They get a +2 die bonus to their survival skill. Technical aptitude. They get the same 2-for-1 bonus, but only on technical skills. And type 2 atmosphere breathing. They need filters to not breathe or to breathe anywhere other than type 2 atmospheres.
Hmm. All right.
Yurak Putzk Ubis gets just the increased stamina, but lose the other two.
All right.
And there you go. That's it. That's all the new species they have in here. I was kind of hoping to see, like, Nalroni. Remember Sprax?
Well, I mean, do we get stats for the actual characters? Like,
yes.
We get a Guri stat line?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, most of this book is just stat lines for people at this time period.
Oh, good. So we know what Dash Rendar's piloting skill is.
Yeah, 8D. Well, actually, there's several piloting skills under Dash Rendar because you can fly capital ships, fighter ships, and light freighters.
Ooh.
So, yeah, Dash gets a whole situation. Also, there's a bit of short fiction where it's revealed that Dash's ship explosion was caused by... or not Dash, Dash's older brother's ship's explosion, which led to Dash Rendar being exiled. Yeah, in Anti-Empire. The explosion itself was sabotage caused by Black Sun under the directive of Shizor.
What?
Yeah, so Shizor had Guri sneak on board Dash's brother's ship and plant explosives and mess with their navigational control so that it would crash into specifically some fairly large and important building on Coruscant. This was because, what are they called, Ren Travel, which is Rendar's travel company. Ren Travel was not willing to sell to XTS, which is the legal shell company of Black Sun. So in an attempt to scare them into either selling or giving up their shipping contracts, they killed a major scion of the House of Rendar through sabotage in a way that would specifically piss off the Emperor.
Okay.
So it's all connected.
Ah, good.
Mm-hmm. Other short stories are fun. There's one for how Guri was built by some guy named Yungel, that part's not obvious, but
obviously
she was built by someone because she's a magic war droid that costs 9 million credits. Obviously, Shizor's the kind of guy who's going to commission that and then send her to go kill the guy that made the droid.
Well, yeah, because anytime he's like, ah, yes, I have the world's best gardener, and he wanted to leave, so I murdered him.
Yeah, yeah, he's like, not only do I have to have the best thing, I have to have the only thing.
Yes.
So he sends Guri right back to kill her own creator. Unfortunately, this dude's really good at making very lifelike droids.
Oh, good.
And so she...
he pulls a LMD then?
Uh-huh. I guess just because this book wanted there to be more Guris available to be running around out in the galaxy, so they were like, yeah, Guri gets sent back to kill her own creator, and she does, and it turns out that was another Guri droid. And he's fine. Now he's going to go into hiding and make droids somewhere else.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's going to make lore and data.
But the vast majority of the book is just stats for people who do not need stats. So you get right off the beginning of the book, it's like, here's Luke's stats, Leia's stats, Lando stats, Chewie, R2, C-3PO, as they existed at this specific moment between the second and third movies of the original trilogy.
Great.
Then we jump to the Empire. Here's Vader's stats. Here's... Remember Vader's little man?
Oh, yeah, his little guy.
His little guy. So we got stats for his little guy. We got stats for the people he was ordering around at the time, like the couple of generals and admirals that are mentioned in the book. We get stats for the Emperor. Then we do Black Sun. We get all those stats. We get stats for Koth Malan. Everyone in Wedge Antilles' squadron, because there's one chapter about them.
Wow.
Which is just completely full of dumb little hints about what's going to happen. It's like, this guy, Dix, he's a very brash pilot. He needs to be careful because that may come back to bite him someday. He dies in the book.
Look, the only reason I have this book is because I've read Shadows of the Empire, obviously. Yeah. You don't need to start hinting at shit.
Exactly.
It's fine.
This woman named Chief seems to have been chafing under the difficulty of living on this asteroid and the poor conditions. Perhaps she's looking for a way to get extra money.
Maybe she wants to rascal something?
Perhaps she could rascal a droid.
Get rascaled.
The thing about Shadows of the Empire was that there were like 10 million NPCs in the book. You know, you had to meet like Skatul. We get Skatul and her second in command. Those are the Barabel bounty hunters that capture Luke for like a hot minute before Lando crashes a car into their house.
Okay. Do we get stats for Barabels in general
I'm pretty sure Barabels must have been covered in some other book because you'd think they'd be in here.
Yeah.
The ones I'm like the most surprised about are Nelroni and Clanthar. Like if you're going to do Eti, then Kreta the Clanthar seems like a really obvious, like what some dude with hoses coming out of his face kind
some
of
dude.
Thing. Yeah. But they must have been in some previous book.
I guess.
Yeah. The stats I told you, or the races I already mentioned, are the only ones we get, like, player character race write-ups for.
Sweet. All right.
Yeah. We also get stats for Spiro the Hodin and, what's his name, the dude at the Benedict Vidcon. Remember him?
Ah, yes.
Yeah, the swamp.
You know,
the,
from Sherlock?
Sewer Man. Yeah. Yeah. Benedict. The two Benedicts from the Doctor Strange movies. No, Benedict Vidcon was the dude who, like, led them through the sewers and then was... summarily blasted for his troubles at the end or something.
Yeah.
It's just that stuff. And then also expansions on every single place you go to in the they spent a little time in that Rodian casino? What if there was a huge chapter all about Rodia and everything that's there? It's casinos.
Turns out.
Uh-huh. So there you have it. That was what was in the book. And even though I have now talked about it for 29 minutes running without stopping, I was worried that there wouldn't be anything for me to say about this book. And so I therefore went and read two more books.
Why would you do this?
Digging for content. Well, I was really worried that this book only had like six player character facing things in it, and it'd be over. There's a one I haven't even mentioned yet. There, the only new skill in the game that was added via this book is the martial art Terazkazi.
Ooh.
Now Terazkazi has been made famous by, you know, yeah, that's the martial art that the Pike sisters were using in it, but also by the fact that there is a PlayStation 1 Star Wars fighting game called Star Wars Masters of Terazkazi.
Yeah.
Which features precisely one Master of Terazkazi.
Which, I mean, it's much better than the old Super Nintendo game, Amateurs of Terazkazi.
Yeah, and the original Nintendo game, Rank Beginners of Terazkazi. White belts. Horse punch.
Everyone's just doing horse punch.
I keep telling you, it's called horse stance. Horse punch.
Punch this horse. What's a horse? We're in Star Wars.
So Terazkazi has been used on and on again, off again, as the core martial art of Star Wars. It's like the karate. We've seen other characters mentioned as having had it in the EU at this point. In this book, we get the stats for how it works. Like I mentioned earlier, WEG Star Wars works by assembling die pools and rolling, like, you know, somewhere between 3 and 10 D6s.
Yeah.
Terazkazi, it's an expansion you buy for brawling that adds additional dice that you have to roll as a grouping when you're using Terazkazi. Notably, Terazkazi cannot be used in the same turn as any defensive action. If you want to use martial arts on people in this game, you have to go all in.
All right.
And the thing that makes it special is you can split your die pool, but only to take dice away from accuracy and move them over to damage.
Well, I mean, given that you can't defend, I suppose this is just the I want to murder a dude with my fist then.
It's basically the martial art for I like to fight guys that have no defense and I want to kill them fast. Like if you're, what are we fighting? I guess it's like an elephant or something where it's real easy to hit.
Yeah,
but it's
fight an elephant.
You know, one of them Star Wars elephants.
You know, Stelephants.
I think they're called
Banthas.
Wampas. Yeah. If you're punching Banthas where you're never going to miss, this is perfect because you can move more dice over to damage, so it'll actually be effective against them.
Great.
And that's it. That's Terazkazi.
Sweet.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I could talk about how I read Mutants Down Under and Roadhogs from After the Bomb. I mean, that's what I'm going to use to make my bonus content character.
Because, you know, fuck WEG.
It takes less time, and I'm intimately more familiar with it. But rather than do that, I will simply say that I read both of them and all their adventures, and they are hilarious and kind of racist.
Good.
And then I will pass it over to you, because I'm really curious to hear what you read.
Okay, so way back, we reviewed Don't Look Back, Terror is Never Far Behind. Now,
game with fat knife clowns in it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you might remember that as the game of the fat knife clown.
Yeah, it's the game that spawned the fat knife clown joke that lasted with us for quite a while.
Now, the Don't Look Back that we have, I only found out after reading the supplement Giant Psychic Insects from Outer Space, is the first edition, and this is a supplement for second edition.
I did not know there was a second edition.
There is, but thankfully, everything that they changed for second edition is mentioned in the supplement.
Oh, useful.
Yeah, so okay. I didn't even need to have the second edition. It was just like, oh, hey, we made it so that instead of difficulty rating being DR, it's now just difficulty and DIF.
Okay.
For the shortened version. Resolutions, or res, are now just rolls. Good, thank you. And physical health is now called body, and mental health has been named psyche. Okay.
You would think that the number one thing they want to fix, I mean, because I only remember like two things about Don't Look Back. One of them is the fat knife clown. The other is that the basic resolution mechanic was just bananas.
Nope. Basic resolution mechanic intact.
With all that decimal point and positive and negative value and shit.
For those who do not remember
The
resolution system was for Don't Look Back, you would have a stat anywhere from -5 to +5, and then a difficulty anywhere from -5 to +5, and that would give you the number of dice you would roll, and then add a +3 onto the absolute value of whatever you had.
Yep.
So if you had a negative one and it was a negative two difficulty, you'd be at negative three, which would then just become three for the absolute value. Mm-hmm. You'd add three for six dice, but if you were in a negative value when you rolled, you had to take the three lowest dice. Mm-hmm. If you were at a positive value, you took the three highest.
And what, I guess zero counts as positive?
You can't
oh, you're right.
Ever
can't do
get
zero.
Zero.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That wouldn't make any sense.
So you get essentially sort of real bad real quick, because getting a high like bonus to something is pretty difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But all the difficulties, unless it's like, oh, this is super easy. Well, okay, well, I wouldn't be rolling for it then.
Right, yeah.
Like, the base difficulty for most stuff is like a minus two.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, Jesus, you got to have a plus three at least before you're even remotely positive.
Jeez.
Now, the game also had a thing called karma, which mm-hmm. changed between editions.
Okay.
So karma before was mostly just a, I spend a point and it either like changes my stats for a one-to-one basis mm-hmm. or lowers someone else's stats for a one-to-one basis. Now they changed it to actual die results.
Oh, interesting.
So the game, you have to roll an 11 or better on your three dice in order to succeed.
Yes.
Which is fucking garbage. Because
I mean, it's really unlikely to happen, especially if you're rolling on a negative value or using the bottom of a set of dice.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still thinking, can we
even
craft,
if you just had a zero and got three dice, you're like, I'm still unlikely to get this.
Yeah, that's like a 45% chance. Can we craft an example real quick of a...
Oh, no, we can't. I can give you a wegzample, though.
Oh, please. I would love to hear a wegzample. Thank you.
No.
Oh. Nah. Can I do it then?
Sure.
Yay. Let's say I want to drive a car, and it's real easy to drive a car, but I'm real bad at it.
Yeah.
So I've got a negative two value, and the difficulty for this is negative one.
Okay.
Then I'm going to take the absolute value of negative two plus negative one, which is negative three, becomes absolute value three, add three dice, roll 66, because the original value was negative before I stripped it for absolute value. I go to 66, drop three highest.
Yes.
So I evaluate only the bottom three rolls, then to assemble the bottom three dice into a total, which I then compare against a chart of success difficulties.
Well, you have to get 11 or better just to succeed, period.
Yes, but it's still kind of a variable success track.
11 to 18 is your success variable.
Right, okay. So yeah, that's basically how most resolution works in the game.
Yeah. So now they changed it so that karma is just you add to the roll after you see it.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of saying like, oh, before I roll, I'm going to try and like bump myself into the positive or whatever, you'd roll, see you got like a 9 and go, all right, I spend 2 karma on it to bump it to 11 and then I succeed.
More or less smart, because otherwise people aren't going to spend karma unless they're literally trying to do something impossible.
Yeah. Now, what they also put in is bad karma, which didn't exist in the first one, and it's just, did the GM not like how you were role-playing? Fuck you. Now he has a way to screw you.
Ugh, great. One of the problems we ran into when talking about Don't Look Back was that it was so GM-facing in terms of difficulty.
Oh, yeah. You're not going to get anything done. And now they're like, hey, and also here's another thing.
Great.
Now, the way abilities work, they did give you a few more in this. You would get a baseline for most things that was a stat minus a number.
Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't have any points in it, like one of the new things in here that they apparently forgot to put in the book is brawling. Brawling defaults to your fitness stat minus three.
Okay. Wow.
Because, you know, it's not barehanded fighting. It's like barroom brawling, so it's improvised weapons as punching.
Yeah, a lot of pool cues and broken beer bottles and stuff. Okay.
Yeah. But then you can spend points into any skill and raise it up.
Right.
So they added in brawling, gossip, haggling, jury rigging, and musical instruments, which defaults to dexterity minus four.
Wow.
Well, if everyone, you don't know how to play a music instrument, then boy howdy do you not.
Why is it so hard? Well, I mean, okay, first of all, this question I really want to ask, because you've done a great job diving right into the mechanics here, but Don't Look Back, Terror is Never Far Behind was a horror game, right?
Yes.
What is the supplement called again?
This is Giant Psychic Insects from Outer Space.
Okay, that's a is it a sci-fi, is it like sci-fi horror then? Is it like yes. aliens and stuff?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So why is musical instrument suddenly in there? What did that add to the game that was missing that needed to be there to be about giant psychic insects?
There is a point.
Mm-hmm.
This book has the meat and potatoes of it is three adventures that are sort of tied together if you want them to be.
Yeah, and let me guess. Are the three of them one for one to various sci-fi movies?
No.
Oh, man. I was all set for that. For the reason musical instruments are in the game is to be to reference Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Nope. It is because in the second adventure, if your PCs had not played the first adventure, the reason for them to be there is that they are looking for... they heard that there was a famous artist
mm-hmm.
that everyone thought was dead that was there, but it's not Elvis. It's like Dim Jorison.
Oh, so it's a made up guy. Okay. Oh, Jim Morrison.
There
right,
you go.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, as you were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're like, oh yeah, my PC knows how to play guitar and he's really into the Jors or whatever the fuck their band is.
Yeah, our band The Portals.
Yeah, they mention one of the famous songs on a jukebox in a place you can play is Come On Baby, Change My Tire.
For fuck's sake, that's yes. so bad.
This book, the
Riders
first Don't
on the
Look,
Bus.
The first Don't Look Back had kind of a...
Dad?
Well, it was kind of like, ooh, this is like cheesy horror.
Yeah.
This one goes... full bananas, like this is your dad.
Okay. Well, because that's the one thing I kind of remembered about Don't Look Back was that it had a vaguely dumb joke tone to it. Okay. The whole thing kind of felt like it was written by the math teacher who thinks he's the fun math teacher.
Yes. And this entire thing is just like, oh man, I gotta tell you, you're gonna find fun times in this one, not like your kids these days with their super serious games. No, you're going to sit down and have fun instead of being a sad, grumpy man. I'm like, was this guy that pissed off about White Wolf? Like, what was the problem with
this
guy?
I mean, when was this written? Was it?
I mean, it is very clear that he is like, White Wolf,
okay.
making games all serious.
No one ever actually takes those White Wolf games mega seriously outside of the LARPs, and even then, not really.
Ugh. So, the game also has two new disadvantages. One is weakness for publicity, so you're a media
okay.
hound.
Okay, sure.
The other one is manic depression.
Oh, geez. I'm sure... You know what? Actually, I'm sorry. I want to say here that I trust Don't Look Back, Terror is Never Far Behind to appropriately handle an actual physical mental illness like manic depression
Obviously.
In a respectful way.
Yes. You know, like normal manic depressives... From one moment to the next, the character can shift from being extremely positive and happy to incredibly negative and depressed. It's lots of fun against authority figures until they bring out the little white coat with the really, really long sleeves. Thanks, book.
I mean, first of all, isn't that actually a description of bipolar disorder?
That is manic depression.
Oh, they're the same thing? I
yes.
thought they were two different things.
No, it is not.
Okay. I thought bipolar was its own. Is bipolar just the new currently accepted term for manic?
It's both. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Okay, fair enough.
But the manic depression is much more you have long swings of whatever,
mm-hmm.
not so much like I sit down Woo-hoo! And I'm super happy and then I'm like, oh, I'm sad. No, I'm not. Anyway, they also added in new mechanics for second edition.
Okay.
Which is, you can now, before you couldn't do multiple actions in a single round, now you can.
Mm-hmm.
It just gives you a ridiculous penalty to do it.
Of
so it's like, oh yeah, your second action is now an additional -5 onto whatever you were doing. You're like, that, I can't.
Great.
There's no way.
So in this very fun game that, that was already impossible, here's a way to make it worse.
Yep. They added then automatic weapons, which is just, it's a gun, but better.
Don't add automatic weapons.
Because the way damage worked is anything would have a damage multiplier. So if you did, like, 3 damage, you'd have to then look at it and go, okay, but my weapon's damage rating is 0.5, so I actually did 1.5 damage instead of 3.
Mm-hmm.
But with burst damage, it's take that 0.5. How many shots did you fire? Multiply it by that. That's your new damage rating.
Well, at least it's straightforward and just straight up better than regular guns. Because usually it's like, how many shots did you fire? 2 of them will hit. And calculate that value and then work out the chance of hitting your friends. And
no, it was just, can you get a gun with automatic firing? Get it.
Yeah.
It's better.
Normally, auto fire is like the worst part of any role-playing game I have to read. Because it's just like, here's 3 pages of this.
They also added in drug damage, which deals damage to your psyche instead of your body.
Okay.
Now, the big thing this book adds is there is an entire chapter dedicated to these psychic insects.
Okay.
They are the Quavati.
Yeah, all right.
The Quavati are sort of mantis-ish looking dudes that are psychic bugs. Their arms are pretty weak because they all have like telekinesis and telepathy, and they don't really use their physical bodies for much. There's one big queen. If they want to populate a new planet, they send like a subsidiary queen out there.
There's one big queen. They call her Divine.
All the subsidiary queens are in charge of whatever, unless there's some huge decision, and then it has to go up the chain to the big queen. The Quavati are all basically kind of hive mind, but their whole thing is, everything's for the hive. There is no selfishness in Quavati society. And as well, no one cares if you read their thoughts, because everyone's just thinking, for the queen!
They're all just thinking about the wonderful card game For the Queen.
Indeed, all of them are like, let's play For the Queen!
Everyone try and pick the queen with the... I don't know how everyone else plays For the Queen, but we always start our For the Queen games with a queen draft.
Yes.
Which I feel like is the right way to do it, because otherwise you'd always just pick the evil lich queen every time.
Every time.
Because she's so rad looking. But we start with a queen draft, and I always try to draft for the dog.
Now, they also have mind control, which... depends on if the victim is willing, i.e. a weak-minded individual or religious fanatic is apparently willing.
Obviously.
Yeah.
If there's one thing I'll say about religious fanatics, it's that they're willing.
They are willing to have people tell them what to do. That's just known.
Yeah.
They have an entire thing on Quavati society and how it works.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it's all based on holding your breath and running into the enemy camp and getting a ball and running back with it before they stop you.
What?
Is that... okay, is that joke too obscure for...
I have no idea what you're talking about right now.
Oh, man. I'm talking about one of the greatest sports in all of India, Kabaddi.
Oh, Kabaddi. Okay.
Yeah, that's the joke. Yes. That's the joke.
Yes, that's right. A giant psychic alien has to run across the field going, Kabaddi, 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 Kabaddi.
That's why you can't read their minds.
Okay. And then also gives you the classes. So you've got stats for queens, breeders, size, techs, the pilots, enforcers, drones. There's all sorts of different stat lines and specialties and whatnot.
I'm going to be honest. I thought you were like, it has stats for queen, the breeders.
The flaming lips.
Elasticas, it's just got it all.
It's got everything. That's why you needed the musical instrument skill.
Exactly.
It then gives you a breakdown of their technology, of like nerve disruptors and molecular agitators. They've got like all of this nonsense, and it tells you about their spacecraft, and I'm going to go ahead and give you a spoiler right here. The Quavati show up in the last paragraph of The Last Adventure and are not involved in any way. They give you an entire chapter of this book dedicated to them, and then they're like, oh yeah, the thing you play does not matter with them at all.
That's amazing.
The one thing that matters is the Quavati have invented microids that are... there are two different kinds.
Little tiny hemorrhoids.
There's tech microids,
mm-hmm.
and if they get into any tech thing, they have like an AI that just goes, how can we improve this?
Okay.
So if they get into like a car, they'll make it more fuel efficient, they'll make it faster, they'll just like go around recreating the car to make it better.
Okay.
And they use that for like all of their technology, so they'll be like, I invented a thing. It kind of sucks. Anyway, here's my AI little mites, and they make it cool.
I invented this metal lump. Here you go, mites, and they have to figure out what it's for.
You do it.
You do all the stuff. What is this lump? I don't even... What was the intended purpose?
I made it rounder? Is that what you wanted?
We put it in the trash for you.
We put it right on the fridge.
We increased its efficiency 1,000-fold by throwing it away.
Now, the other thing they have, which is the major MacGuffin for all three stories,
mm-hmm.
is biomicroids. And the biomicroids are essentially their little nano doctor things.
Okay.
So if they get injured or sick or whatever, they have just these little microids in their blood that go out and fix everything.
Okay.
If it gets on a human, it will attempt to basically turn them into a bug.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But it starts out and you're
perhaps
like,
they'll wake up and be a cockroach.
I mean, eventually.
Yeah.
Because it starts out and you're like, what happens? Oh, day one, you crave raw meat.
Oh, okay.
Because the insects all eat meat.
All right. Yeah.
And then you'll begin to understand what people are thinking and you gain mind reading at a -2 skill.
Okay.
And so on, and it just goes, and then they're like...
I feel like I already have mind reading at a -2 level. Like, just right now. Like, I could just look at you and be like, yeah, you're thinking about how you wish I'd stop talking so you could finish this.
Exactly. Eventually, you start getting stronger, but your skin turns gray, your hair becomes coarse, you get cloudy eyes,
mm-hmm.
and then eventually you get, like, telekinesis... And at about 9 or 10 days, you spin a cocoon, and then you, when you get out, you are now like a bug-eyed, weird version of a human
mm-hmm.
that had all the memories of whatever the Quavati's blood that had the microids in it that got on you
okay.
uploaded into your brain. So now you're sort of like a human hybrid with memories from a dead Quavati and also your own brain.
Okay. And do you immediately also pick up the whole For the Hive personality traits? And
kind of. Like, you get all the knowledge, you understand their philosophy and everything, so you kind of... It doesn't give you any sort of rules for, okay, but what happens when that happens? Like, is my character done? Do I now have some weird role-playing thing where I'm fighting with myself, or... No, it just says, yeah, now you got these memories and stuff. Anyway, bye.
Okay. Thank you for that. But I'm guessing the MacGuffin is never that the player characters get infected with these things, but rather...
Oh, you can.
Oh, okay.
Don't you worry about that.
All right. Good to know.
that also adds in a entire, like, special agency thing called NerdCo. Yep, and NerdCo is going to be... pretty much like the, like, Men in Black scientist guys who come and get you. But the entire...
We're putting a special initiative together.
It's called NerdCo.
It's for people who understand that 2D waifus are way better than 3D women.
It's the New England Research and Development Company.
Oh, okay, sure, why not?
NerdCo. Now, the actual... the fucking story itself for the adventure... Part one is essentially nothing. It is, all right, if you want to do part one,
you may cry.
You must look outside. You may cry.
If you wish.
The first thing is just, what is this? Oh, you establish that all the characters have been abducted.
Mm-hmm.
They've been abducted before, and... there is, while they're there, they're all in, like, stasis pods,
mm-hmm.
and the ship crashes while they're in the stasis pods, so the crash kills all the Quavati, but everyone in the stasis pods was fine.
Okay.
But you get out, there was one, there's an NPC who's a sexy blonde lady.
Ugh. The thing, I keep getting this game mixed up with a different horror comedy game we reviewed a while back in my head.
Yeah, the 13.
The horror movie, B movie game. Yeah. It had like a way too long of a name.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, the RPG 13 system.
Thank you.
But no, this added in an NPC sexy lady specifically so she can be the one who gets infected with microid blood.
Okay.
But the entire adventure is you wake up. What do? And it's like, do you search around the ship or leave through the obvious exit? If you search around the ship, you might find like a photon gun.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, then you go outside and then helicopters show up and you can either leave with a dude in his pickup truck or not. That's the adventure. That's the whole adventure.
That's amazing. Okay, well, I choose to remain on the ship. I'm going to try and resurrect Superman by dropping a box into some goop.
Oh, you drop a box into the goop. The box is now way more efficient.
Yes, this mother box has become a three mother's box.
Ah, yes, mother's box.
Mm-hmm.
It's become a mother's box.
If you put more than one mother box together, you get a mother's baw.
Yeah, you get a Mark mother's baw.
Yeah, and then he whips it.
Good.
Yeah.
Adventure number two is, if you were still in adventure number one, where you crash landed is outside a little town in Ohio that sucks ass. But I repeat myself.
I'm sorry, hang on.
The whole thing there is, all right, now you're just dealing with people start getting infected with this blood because it's like, oh, the sexy lady infects the dude with the pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
The dude with the pickup truck infects some like farmer's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just a list of who gets infected in what order. There is nothing for you to do here. The entire adventure
happens whether or not you involve yourself.
Oh yeah. The entire adventure is like, and now looking over at the PCs, they can, I don't know. They can like, talk to people, I guess.
What's the infection vector?
It is blood. Blood is...
How is she getting blood on Pickup Truck Man?
Because she's covered in Quvati blood.
Oh, okay.
She was the one outside the chamber, so she is like head-to-toe Quvati blood.
Okay.
And then, obviously, dude in Pickup Truck is like, hey, basically naked hot chick, come with me, and gets the blood on him as well.
Okay.
But, I mean, that means that you'd have two people with the same memories uploaded, and that's got to get weird, but that never gets mentioned.
Yeah, yeah. And she's naked, you say?
Mostly.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, I'm sure she's in, like...
Does she have a scrap of fabric covering her nipples?
Yeah, she's got, like, strips of cloth or some shit.
Of course, yeah. Short shorts and her hair. She has that kind of perfect boob-covering hair.
So, the rest of the town just starts getting weird.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the rest of the town gets infected is one of the guys in town is like an old hermit, and he finds some dead Quvati and sells it to Big Al's diner for meat, because normally he goes hunting and he's like, oh yeah, I give him like venison and stuff,
right?
But in this he's just like, oh, I took a thorax of an obvious giant alien and was like, here, use this. And indeed he does.
I love the notion that that's in, like, they're like, yeah, no questions asked.
Yep.
What do you got there, a big weird thorax full of pulsing gray meat? Yeah, we'll make burgers out of this, no problem.
And that is exactly what it says.
Yeah.
Big Al takes it, grinds it up, and doesn't care.
Yeah.
Good. Great.
Why not just sell him like yoga mats at that point? Just be like, yeah, I took this off a big flat deer.
So, yes.
That's how we do out here in small town Ohio. I don't know which small town Ohio city it is specifically. Is it Stimpsburg? Dungus?
Ah, yes. Fuckwater.
Parsons, Milsons, Darson's ass.
It is Wheelersville, or Wheelersville, W-E-I-L.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, the crash site, in case you were one of the people there, Nerdco sets up an entire, like, fake logging operation there in the woods where you crashed to recover the ship.
Okay.
If the PCs try and get in there, it has, like, 12 different ways that they just get killed.
Okay.
They're like, oh, and there's all these dogs and lights. They've got the highest tech security system. If anyone goes past this limit, they'll be shot. You're like,
yeah.
Okay, so what is this doing in the adventure?
Fake loggers kill you with chainsaws.
Oh, if you manage to get near it and you look in the window, you'll see the like camp is just full of guys in black suits. Like, okay, sure. Does this?
You're pretty sure they're a ska band.
No, that would be guys in checker suits.
Well, their shoes are checkered anyway.
Then their hats.
Yeah, their shoes and hats are checkered. They're wearing plain black suits. They all seem to be sitting in one Cadillac for some reason. Oh, things have gone horribly wrong, guys. Rancid is here.
And that adventure is basically you just watching this town devolve until either you also devolve and are taken away to Nerdco.
Mm-hmm.
Or you figure out where they're going, or none of the above, and you don't do the third adventure. Third adventure is in Nerdco, and it's just like one of you, if you were infected, starts trying to contact the Quivati,
mm-hmm.
and like a bunch of weird psychic phenomena happens in another town, which again is the PCs just being like, well, what can we do? Well, this thing happens in this bar. Yeah, but what do we do? Well, the news reports this thing in the bar. What are we doing? How is this an adventure and not just a story you're telling me?
Well, you can react to it.
Oh, you could be like, ah, my character thinks that's weird.
I choose to watch the television news story?
Ah, very well.
Okay, very good. Roll for that. Thank you.
You're at a minus -5.
You fail to watch it. You are infected by Kavati blood.
The end of the adventure is, if you have not been cured of the Quivati microids yet, the Quivati can take you back on their ship,
mm-hmm.
and be like, hey, you're a weird hybrid. Let's do experiments on you.
Hey, are you a weird hybrid? I am a weird hybrid. Let's be friends.
It's like I said, the end of the third adventure is just, oh, the Quivati basically invade Nerdco and try and take anyone who's still infected back with them.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
That's the end of the adventure. You can try and fight against them or fight with them.
Obviously, they are extremely susceptible to the to musical instruments.
Obviously, so you show up and you've got a ukulele and they're like, nope, we'll leave that guy.
Shit, that guy's got a pool cue.
Oh, no.
He knows barroom brawling.
I could not have been more amused by the fact that the adventures in this book are just, hey, this stuff happens. You are not involved.
Yeah.
It will play out exactly the way that I say it plays out, no matter what you do.
Yeah. Like the two after the bomb supplements I read through as well were like mostly just adventures. And the adventures had the similar flair of this will play out whether or not you get involved.
Yeah. It's just what happens. These two different things have a fight. Oh, what do I do? You watched the fight. Thanks.
I think my favorite thing, and I'm just going to say the one thing about After the Bomb so I can justify making it After the Bomb character for the bonus content.
Sure.
Is my favorite thing about both the After the Bomb books I read, and I read Mutants Down Under and Roadhogs, is that they do a thing where they introduce the companies and the major players in the part of the world that they're covering, Central California and Australia, respectively.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be like, oh, this is Anima Corp, and it's a whole company that does, like, mutant experiments on animals to learn things about them.
Okay.
So it gives you that, and then it gives you the full stat breakdown of the most important person in that organization. So they'll be like, Animal Corp is headed up by this tiger lady, and here's her stats. It's like if you were trying to read about American society, and it was like, so Amazon is super important, and here's how many hit points Jeff Bezos has.
Well, I mean, if I want to kill Bezos, I gotta know how many hit points he has.
What's his foraging skill percentage? It's like, that is not relevant information. You're not gonna. It's so unlikely you're gonna get in a fight with this lady who runs a legitimate company.
Love it.
Yeah, and it just repeats itself over and over again like that. It'll be like, here's the Stainless Steel Stallions. They're a horse-based biker gang. Here's the most important one of them in his stats, so in case you wanted to know what his physical beauty was.
Good.
And you're like, why? Aren't I more likely to fight, like, some of them on bikes and not, like, their king?
No. Obviously, if you meet them, you're going to have to fight the leader of the pack.
Vroom, vroom. Yeah, honestly, Roadhogs is one of my favorite supplements for Riffs. It's only 40 or after the bomb. It's only 40 pages long, and it mostly is just a list of mutant animals and then two adventures. And the adventures are like the Magnificent Seven, but prairie dogs. and the other one is just like drive up to where the Roadhogs live, because Roadhogs are like a pig-based biker gang that lives in Oregon and are mean.
Good.
And you live in Central and Northern California, where good biker gangs are, who have ritual gang wars. You only fight each other with clubs and chains. The weapons of the true noble biker, not the guns and extra whips of the savage biker to the north.
Great. Absolutely great.
Yeah, yeah. And then the only thing worth saying about the Australia book is there is a 2-page interview with a Aboriginal man written, both sides written by Kevin Simbita. Because the Aborigines are exceedingly happy that the after the bomb events happen. In the after the bomb world, the apocalypse is like all the machines melted.
Yeah.
And all the humans started mutating into animals.
Yeah.
And the Aborigines are like, perfect. That means Dreamtime has come back. And now we're going to do things our way. So there's this whole interview with a guy, like an Aboriginal guy, and they're like, so why weren't you worried when all the machines started melting into the earth? And he's like, you hands in pockets men who came to our land with your sticks and your machines. He's like, oh no.
Oh, good. Thanks, Kevin.
No, don't do this.
So there you go. Those are some supplements we did.
Uh-huh.
Now, we are going to make characters in these, mm-hmm. as we have mentioned before. If you go to patreon.com/systemmastery, you can hear us make characters for two different things. Will I have the brawling skill? Who knows?
Will I have the brawling skill? Probably. Rifts gives you, Palladium gives you lots and lots of skills.
Yes.
How about that?
How about that? How about that?
Patreon. It's patron though, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got so many patrons.
It's not like I'm always telling people not to patronize me.
Yes, if this was a site where people could patronize you for money, then it would be Patreon.
I mean, if you want to go to the site where you can patronize me for money, that's Clips for Sale.
I've got a Just Fans page.
Mm-hmm. I have a My Free Cam site where I do a webcam, and I just sit in there, and you can patronize me.
And like, you can admonish me for whatever.
Yeah, like I'll sit there, and you can like turn on your own webcam and open a jar and hand it to my camera and be like, there you go. I don't think you had the strength to do that. And I'd be like, don't patronize me. Also, give me 50 tokens. Patreon.com/SystemMastery is the website to go to support us, to get the bonus content for these System Mastery episodes. It's a dollar, just a dollar. Why not come on board? We are really, really trying to hit that final goal. We want that $3,000 per episode goal where we have to buy a pig.
We have to.
It was a promise we made, and by God, we
shan't back down.
5.5 years ago, we made a joke that we would make when the Patreon got started and successful, if we hit $3,000, we'd have to buy a pig. This is because our initial goal was for $6. and we were like, what if we made 500 times that much?
Oh, there's no way.
That's dumb.
Ha ha.
Well, now we're on the downslope and rapidly going towards it, and I want to see it happen because I want to see if we can live up to a dumb joke that 5 years ago Jeff made.
Can we do it?
Can a pig be bought?
No.
And please stop telling us that there's no such thing as micro pigs. We know that, and there's no mention of micro pigs in the goal.
I mean, I do want a micro pig. I wish it existed.
I would love it if they existed, too, but I know that micro pigs are just piglets.
They're just,
all right.
Just little piglets.
All right.
But you can dress them up in a little raincoat and booties and give them ice cream.
Yeah, or beer. It feels like every time we mention the pig goal, I get someone new to join the Discord and send me a private message. It's like, hey, did you know there's no such thing as micro pigs? And I have to be like, yes, I never say micro pig except in response to these jokes.
We're getting a macro pig.
We're getting a macro pig.
Yeah.
The biggest pig on the market.
The biggest, fattest. Its head is like a shark's fin.
I want one of them Fukushima-grade radioactive death pigs.
Good.
Okay. So anyway, that's the Patreon. John, I think we have something else we wanted to talk about today.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
We do.
Mm-hmm. And what's that?
That is
my... These nuts.
Yeah. God damn it. The upcoming Kickstarter.
Kickstarter, see? of a show, by, or I'm sorry, a book by very good friends of ours that we have also played, an RPG that we have played and enjoyed with them.
Yeah, Descent into Midnight is an RPG coming up that, it is weird, but super interesting.
It's weird in a way that appeals to me specifically, and probably a lot of other people, because I have a big old love boner for weird shit from the ocean.
Yeah, and the whole thing is like, hey, you know all of those documentaries about, like, the absolute bonkers nonsense that lives in the dark parts of the ocean?
Mm-hmm.
This is a game where you play that, except you're also, like, in a highly intelligent society and have cool powers and stuff.
Yeah, no, it's a PBTA-inspired game where you play as a variety of playbooks that are pretty well, interestingly thought out. You have things like the Cultivator, the Defender, people who are like the roles make sense, and then you build yourself based around trivia about fascinating deep sea creatures.
And you can do whatever the hell you want to. Mm-hmm.
You can do whatever you want in this game.
Whatever you want.
You won't last 5 minutes.
You're gonna come so fast
playing
in this
Descent
game.
Into Midnight.
Doctors hate this one weird trick.
If you have a jealous girlfriend, do not play Descent into Midnight.
Come play Descent into Midnight, my lord.
That's worth $50.
No, but I think when we played, I was like a plesiosaur with also stomach tentacles.
And I was this vampire squid that was an actual vampire.
Yes, an actual vampire squid.
Like an old Bela Lugosi thing.
Yeah, you got like a little cape and everything.
Blah, I want to suck your blood or whatever. Actually, I want to eat fallen, ocean snow. But also, I can teleport.
And we had a society that was ruled by whales for no reason.
The country.
Yeah, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
No, the level of, like, very weird and intersecting very interesting is great for this.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, not really to the same extent as you, but pretty much any time I hear any sort of deep sea fact, I'm like, this shit is buck wild and I love it.
Yeah, one of my favorites is I can't remember the name of it at the moment, but there's an amphipod that lives in the medium deep sea ocean, which is 100% transparent when it's in water.
Yeah.
It is just the invisible amphipod. And when you see him out on land, when someone's holding one in your hand, you're like, that's a fucking giant see-through squid or a shrimp, and I hate it.
Oh, yeah. Is you're just like, that looks like a squirmy glass shrimp, I hate everything.
That's the kind of stuff I love.
Yeah.
I've been talking to the people I know best from the designers of Descent into Midnight are the two Riches. You got Richard Kreutz Landry and Rich Howard. And the two of them, I follow them both on Twitter, and every time they talk, they're like, hey, I'm looking for weird fish. And I'm like, great. That's my time to shine.
Hello.
Look at the blanket octopus. It's an octopus with a Superman cape. And I love that, because it's like, go find something crazy from the ocean and then play it. As opposed to just, you know, having fun looking at the pictures of it.
Yeah, so that's, you can follow it now on Kickstarter for Descent into Midnight. I think it goes live
The 15th of this month, February 2020.
Yeah.
I do not know the prices for the game off the top of my head, but I can tell you that I do plan to back it personally.
And do you want to announce the other thing?
Sure, fire away.
So for our $5 and up donors.
Yes.
We are going to have Richard and Rich on Afterthought for next month.
Yeah.
So if you've got questions for them about the game or just about weird ocean life in general, go ahead and kick that over to us on Discord.
If you're an Afterthought subscriber, you know how to do it already.
Yep.
Yeah. They're going to both be joining us. They'll be along to talk about the game, shoot the breeze like we always do, and just like we always do when we keep people on our Afterthought show as guests, we make them stay around and answer all the dumb questions.
Hell yeah. So get those questions in, my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think that's basically all the house cleaning we got for now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like talking about all our various merches and books and whatever.
Yeah, that don't matter. We don't need to make money. Fuck that.
You know what? At this point,
self-promotion is overplayed.
I'm not even going to tell you. How come you people don't do any work of your own? For God's sake.
For God's sake, get out there and bootstrap yourself.
You go find our book and buy it, for fuck's sake. I'm just saying. Shouldn't have to be my job.
educate yourself.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. We'll see you real soon. Have a good week.